Hello, and welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Draft is brought to you by our club members and our site partners. You can check them out on our website and join the Post Status Club at poststatus.com/club. You'll be joining over 400 wonderful club members, and you'll never miss important WordPress news again. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, WP Valet, for high-end site management and support. Keep your clients happy and coming back. Get expert services from WP Valet and your sites will function flawlessly. WP Valet's preventative care provides peace of mind around the clock. Check out WP Valet at thewpvalet.com. Thanks to WP Valet for being a Post Status partner. Now here's our show. Hey everybody, I'm Brian and I'm the editor of Post Status.
And I'm Joe, I'm the co-founder and CTO of HumanMade. And welcome to episode 3 of the Post Status Draft podcast.
Today, we're going to talk about some upcoming events and why events are worthwhile in general. We're going to talk about WordPress comments and PHP 7/HHVM.
Cool. Some good topics, I think.
Yeah, I think we'll have a good time. We want to start with events and justification for them. But what events are you going to be going to in the coming months,
Jim? Yeah, so I don't actually have any booked, but that's usually the way that I do things. It's by leaving it till the last minute and paying way over the odds for air travel and things like that. Obviously, there's the one we mentioned at the end of the last podcast, A Day of Rest, which is primarily organized by HumanMade and Siobhan. And that's not till January, so that's a little way out yet. I'm in New York, so WordCamp New York, probably planning to go to. Again, I haven't really looked into tickets or anything.
That one's on Halloween?
Yeah, that's a Halloween one, apparently, so I don't know if I have to go in full fancy dress or what the score is there yet. But that should be a good time. And then I guess there's WordCamp US, which maybe we can talk about a little bit, because I'm not totally up to speed on that, but I think I'm in roughly the right area of the country, if my geography is any good.
Yeah, and then I'm not going to New York City, but I am going to be in Tampa at the end of September. But otherwise, I'm going to A Day of Rest in WordCamp US as well. And then next year, I'm planning to be at Pressnomics, a business conference in Phoenix, in March. And then WordCamp EU is in June. So almost a year out, I'm planning already to go on that one.
Wow, that is some serious planning.
Yeah, and WordCamp US is in early December. December 1st through the 7th are the days that I'll be there, and I think you'll be there as well, and that's in Philadelphia.
Yeah, actually. So I guess the community summit is around from kind of beforehand, right? Is that the...
Right, it's the 2nd and 3rd, and then the event's the 4th and 5th.
Cool. And so sixth, I don't know whether I'll be going to that, but I might be... I may go early to be a groupie anyway and
yeah,
people that are hanging around.
I think I'm keeping you on the hook for that one.
All right, there we go.
I think you need to go. But obviously, the point of this is not to talk about specifically our events as much as how we justify going to 4, 5, 6 events a year.
And yeah, probably what's more the value that I probably go to.
Yeah, I'm sure you go to more than I do. But I know personally, I'm planning at least 5 events over the course of the year that I travel to. And for me, I budget roughly $1,000 per event because, you know, if you talk about $350 to $500 for your average flight in country or in continent for people that are traveling Europe for their events, plus a couple $100 a night in hotel and other expenses, then you can quickly spend $1,000 on a conference. For some events, I'm spending more, and then for some, I spend a little less. But roughly, yeah. I'm talking $5,000 a year just to travel to a handful of conferences, and I'm sure your investment is a little more than that.
Yeah, I mean, for at least for HumanMade, then conference going is one of our bigger expenses, apart from salaries, because it's kind of perk of the job there. But often people will be going, you know, a far way. I think take WordCamp San Francisco. last year, then maybe four of us went from Europe, and obviously flights are a lot, hotels aren't super cheap in San Francisco, and it definitely adds up. And I guess maybe the question we're kind of rolling around to here is like, is it worth it, and what are we doing this for? how would you kind of answer that, I guess, on face value of what is the reason for you doing these events?
Yeah, I saw a blog post where someone was talking about why you would and why you wouldn't, and they were saying for some people it just might not be worthwhile. And I think no matter really your industry, a conference is what you make of it. So either way, you kind of have to put yourself out of your comfort zone, especially if you're an introvert. But there is, it's difficult to replace the value of in-person meetings.
Mm.
And I get a ton of value from conferences for a multitude of reasons. But I think for our audience, we can speak on behalf of a couple of audience groups. One would be consultants, and another would be product makers or service providers, something like that. You and I fit basically both of those criteria.
Sure.
And from a consultant standpoint, there's obviously the learning element, although I think that's probably the least appropriate reason to go to a conference, to travel to a conference, because there are WordCamps in pretty much every local area, and most places have other conferences for developers and designers as well, like, you know, whether it's like a Refresh event or a some kind of local tech event or whatever.
There's also, I guess, a huge amount available online in terms of conferences being recorded and things like that. Live streaming, again, is not super uncommon now. So you definitely don't need to if you just kind of want the content of the talks, I guess.
Yeah, and personally, that's value I get, but it's not why I go. I more go from a consulting standpoint. When I went, it was because I wanted to meet people that could either refer me clients, or they could be a client themselves. Mm-hmm. Or on the other end of the spectrum, if you're in management or own your own firm, it's a good hiring technique because you meet potential people that you could interview.
Yeah, I think I almost certainly never got a client or had anything on that side of things happen at a conference. Mm-hmm. But it's probably, you know, different circles and different, depends where you're focusing your efforts as a consultant or whatever, what part of the market. Maybe just the stuff that my company typically does doesn't fit well into that. So, but certainly on the hiring side, there's no doubt that, you know, basically the only thing that HumanMade has is the people that work for it. And that is complete thanks to being part of the community and that all those people being there and us having a chance to meet everybody. So I think that is, in terms of business-wise, very valuable.
How many of y'all's employees do you think you've hired through meeting them at conferences and stuff?
Ooh, probably over 90%.
Wow.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, I guess, don't use this to justify it with your employer, but if you're interested in a new job, going to a conference is a good way to meet potential people that could hire you.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's not, I guess we kind of live in an industry where things are quite separate. So a conference is just a way to bring people together. And so the hiring part is probably part of that. You know, if we were some Wall Street firm or something, then I'd probably be bumping into people that could be hiring all the time. But frankly, that just doesn't really happen, you know, with us all working remotely from, you know, wherever we may be. So just that kind of centralization, bring everybody together aspect allows for so many different things to happen like that, that are usually more difficult.
Hmm. Another probably more applicable reason for going to a conference would be partnerships. So kind of a B2B element.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I guess maybe some of the stuff that we've worked on together, you could say maybe is, you know, fits into that even. Meeting your peers and like banding up. Like, there was definitely, I think, you know, some freelancers will band together to get bigger projects and stuff like that, and a great place to meet those people that you have the same business philosophies with and things like that. Again, obviously, mm-hmm. conference around WordPress is the best group of people you're going to get to best kind of suit that need.
Yeah. And those partnerships could be from a consulting standpoint, but they could also be from a product maker standpoint, especially in the WordPress world. I think that's where people are really missing out if they're not going to conferences. The hallway track, the after parties, the discussions outside of the conference, I feel like those are really, really good opportunities to come up with new ways that you can collaborate with people and kind of work together.
Right.
And also, it's a great opportunity to get customer feedback, because if you're in the WordPress world and you have a distribution of your products that's even, you know, relatively significant, then there's going to be people at that conference that are people that have bought your product or used your plugin. And it's really great to get in-person feedback from those conversations.
Yeah. I think if I'd have had a penny for every time I've been out drinking and somebody's come up to tell me about a WP Remote bug that they've had, then I'd probably be a rich person. So I will say there is a negative side to this, which, well, it does allow you FaceTime for people to tell you their issues, which is a good thing. I totally agree. It's it's just usually when somebody approaches me and says something like, oh, I use one of your plugins, I know the thing that's going to come directly after is, here's the problem I had and how can I fix that? Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's all good fun. Obviously, I didn't mind that.
You at least get to log the bug.
Yeah, exactly.
Another thing, and this I got this from Groove, which is a help desk service. And, you know, the guy was giving these reasons. And then the very next two questions in this kind of Q&A blog post that I'll link up were two good reasons to go to the conference. And one was what I just said about getting feedback. But another one is, the next question in this blog post was, how do you get your first customers to trust you? And actually, I think that's where conferences can be really valuable, because you're spending time in person, you're drinking coffee or having a beer with these people, or you're presenting to them, and they're immediately, whether they know it or not, they're humanizing your product, because they're looking at your face and they're going to treat you differently and they're going to trust you more. Because now you're not just Happy Tables or WP Remote to them. You're Joe.
Sure.
And if they're your customer, they are going to be a little more loyal to you, I think, if they've met you in person, if they've hung out with you, if you've bought them a beer.
Yeah. No, that's definitely true. I can definitely relate to that. I think that's definitely happened in several cases, personally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've only been going to conferences for a few years. The first couple years of my involvement in WordPress, I didn't really have the means or the job to be able to get out of work and go to a conference. But since I've been going to them, I've met, I'd say, 80% of the people whose commercial plugins and themes that I've bought, I've met them in person now. And it makes me, one, more hesitant to leave them because I like using their products because I've met these people and I like them. Mm. And it makes me more of an advocate for them as well, so that when someone's like, hey, have you used WooCommerce? And I can say, yeah, well, I have, and I recommend it, and I like it, and I know these guys and gals, and I like them, and, you know, I've spent time with them. And I think that's so much stronger of a recommendation than, like, they got these features that work well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the whole community thing, really. I think that's why you see so many of the WordPress companies. I would say, well, it's difficult to say because we don't know everybody's success and finances, but it would seem the ones that are pretty key in the community are generally doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that it makes a big deal whether you're speaking or not as to the value of the conference for you personally?
So I'm not somebody that speaks very much. I often kind of step in at the last minute, you know, maybe there's a slot going and I'll do something. I don't think it makes a big difference, but I would say that when I kind of think back to the first WordCamp that I went to, like, I had no idea about anybody in the community, didn't know anybody, you know, turned up, and it was more like, I kind of compare it to how I feel now, it's a little bit like more like your first day of school when you compare that to when you've been going to school and you now kind of like, you know the ropes. So it was a totally different experience then. So even though I'm not kind of going and speaking all the time, like, my motivation for going to a conference now is solely about going and meeting people and talking to people that I already know, and, you know, that side of it, rather than like, I would never look at a WordCamp schedule now or something before I go. It just doesn't excite me anymore. I think, like, I don't know if it's just I've been to a kind of good amount, and usually what happens is ahead of time I'm really not that worried about the schedule, but then I'll get there and I'll be like, oh, this sounds interesting, I'll go and see that. I'll go and see that. But if I'm totally honest, that doesn't kind of interest me a huge amount, and I'm not sure exactly why that is. If it's just that I've been to a lot of WordCamps and I do WordPress all the time, and like, mm-hmm. when I see, I don't know, you know, all these topics that people are talking about are totally valid, it just doesn't it doesn't interest me as much as it used to, definitely. Now, if I compare that to a couple of months ago, or about a month ago, I went to DNX, a Digital Nomad Conference in Berlin, which is a community that I had never been a part of, and I had no idea. And it was like stepping back into like when I went to my first WordCamp, and it was a totally different experience. Suddenly I was totally interested by all the stuff that people were talking about, and all the topics were new to me, and it was really about the organized conference side of things, whereas I go to a WordCamp and I'm half the time kind of like hacking away on my laptop, chatting to people about work that I'm doing or something like that. So
it's a degree of your familiarity with that particular conference circuit.
Right. So I just don't think that I don't really treat WordPress conferences the same that I do any other conference. So I think if you're somebody that, I don't know, WordCamp is one of many conferences that you go to, then that's just not the angle I'm coming at it from, really.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I do think for certain types of WordPress conferences, I get more out of them. A day of rest, I'm going to want to be in every session because it's a super niche-focused sure. conference with certain types of experts, that are people that build and really understand the REST API. Similarly, I went to WordPress VIP's intensive developer conference for WordPress VIP partners, and it's like Mike Adams teaching you WordPress security, which is awesome.
Yeah, some great sessions there.
You know, there's really talented people that are teaching you. Or Pressnomics, you know, I really enjoy some of the business sessions. But the regional WordPress conferences, it's not that there's not good presentations and that all of the presentations don't have a certain amount of value, but I get more out of the hallway track for the majority of those sessions than I do from the event itself. And personally, on the note of speaking versus not speaking and its impact, I actually, for one conference, I spoke about membership sites and I used my site as my example. And I think I got like 10 or 11 new members just because I referenced it offhand, but they liked the content of talking about membership sites. And I ended up getting a lot of clients because of it. And that one happened to also be extremely cheap for me because I stayed with a friend and drove to it because it was Atlanta. Right. And it ended up being very profitable. I don't think that's the norm, but it's a nice side effect if it does happen.
Yeah, I guess so. I generally don't. I guess we're kind of in different businesses. I've never thought of a WordCamp as any kind of, you know,
marketing opportunity.
Right. Exactly. Like, we sponsor WordCamps. You know, definitely spend, you know, I don't know, $10,000, $15,000 a year or something on sponsoring WordCamps. But it's never. I've never done the, like, we'll go to a conference and we'll sponsor it and we'll, like, play that, you know, come talk to us about whatever, like, you know, mm-hmm. if we're a sponsor, it's just because it's kind of like a vanity kind of thing, or just kind of want to help out with, because they didn't manage to make sponsorship or something like that. So I don't come from that side of things.
I do think some companies have done well sponsoring WordCamps, though.
Oh, definitely.
Two ways. One is if you co-align a sponsorship with a product launch. I've seen that be successful for people. Like, they come out with a new thing and they sponsor the WordCamp as well. So your name's there, and then you meet people at your booth and you're like, hey, we're launching our forms plugin or something. Like, and that can be successful. Although I wouldn't expect an immediate return. It's more like a people now recognize you. Then when that thing comes up, they might remember you type of thing.
Yeah, I would say on that, it's difficult to obviously weigh it all up, but I would say that WordCamps are incredibly friendly, and you can meet a huge amount of people, and people will probably, you know, if you're part of the community, they're going to know. Like, I don't think Pippin Williams needs to go and sponsor a WordCamp and have a booth. Like, everybody just kind of knows that guy, and, you know, knows he's a sound guy and knows that he makes plugins. Like, I guess kind of depends what angle you want to take, but I don't think you need to spend the money on sponsorship for that reason necessarily.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other route that it can work well, though, is I'll call it market penetration, for lack of a better word. And my example for this is, let's say you're a host. The hosts are the biggest sponsors of any WordCamp. And there's no reason why another product couldn't do this if they hit the right ones. But you essentially fully embed yourself into that particular circuit. And, like, people just keep hearing your name and you keep working those relationships.
Yeah. It's the brand awareness thing, right?
Right. SiteGround did a great job of this, because for 2 years straight, basically, they sponsored a lot of big WordCamps. And they're not necessarily huge sponsorships, maybe $1,000 or maybe $2,500. I mean, that's pretty much the range of what you're going to pay for sponsorships. But they got their name out there over and over again, and they got their they got some pretty serious people, like their CEO and their marketing
person. I think they did it really well.
And they all of a sudden became like one of the biggest WordPress hosts, like of who people would recommend for a WordPress host.
Right. And you know, WordPress hosting is becoming more of a commodity now, and you kind of need to do more than build the product. And I think they did really showed how they could just be a positive part of the community while still obviously, being there for commercial reasons, but did it in a very nice, genuine way where everybody was kind of welcoming to that.
And you can compare that to other hosts that might be doing the same thing to turn around their reputation. Like, GoDaddy's done a good job of that. And they've done it not with branding, but they've done it with one product, but two, putting human beings at their conferences and having people like talk to them and one by one convincing influencers in a community that they've changed and that they're better.
Right. Do you think that's a WordPress specific thing, or is that just a how companies should do the community conference circuit in any technology? Do you think that's the same?
I think any technology can apply it. I've seen it with some podcasts where the same company sponsors something over and over again, like a podcast.
Right.
And it just does really well that way because you're just constantly hearing it. So, like, you know.
Yeah, when are we going to be advertising Casper mattresses? That's what I want to know.
Or Squarespace.
Yeah.
I don't think that would quite work for us, but
it's true.
You know, the easy one to say is like Serial, the big NPR mystery podcast. Like, everybody knows that MailChimp ad and the MailKimp little thing in it. And it's, you know, like, you just hit it hard enough and you do it right, then you can have an effect with advertising through a conference or a podcast or something like that. I think it works well from a brand penetration standpoint. And with WordCamps, you can do that for fairly cheap. So let's say you spend a year building a plugin and you've estimated that costs you $100,000 in development time for your company. Then what's $10,000 to go to 10 WordCamps and sponsor them at $1,000 a piece, get a booth and meet people? Like, that's really not that big of an investment.
Yeah, no, it's true. And I think under budgeting, marketing is a pretty big, a common failing of people starting their own products. You need to set aside serious money to actually let people know about it.
Yeah. So, I think conferences can be really worthwhile, and they don't have to just be for big brands. I think individuals can really get themselves out there that way and market themselves. And, you know, I've I I've had a lot of success with conferences of getting to know people, and it's really impacted the way that I work with WordPress stuff. So yeah, we'll be at a day of rest. We'll be at WordCamp US, which is going to be like 2,000 people. You'll be in New York City. I'll be in Tampa. We'll be at, or I'll be at Pressnomics. I don't know if you will be. And then WordCamp EU next year.
Yeah, I could be at Pressnomics. I've never actually been before, but
it's a lot of fun.
I hear it's a lot of fun. So
yeah. So yeah, yeah, people should say hey to us if they go to those.
Absolutely.
But that's our justification for them. And I think I end up getting my $5,000 worth in value big time. Like Tampa, I'm not going for the event. I'm going because three or four of my sponsored partners are going to be there, and I'm going to get to spend time with them.
Right.
So that alone is worth it to me.
Business expense.
Yep. So let's skip on to comments in WordPress.
Yeah, I don't, maybe you should do the lead in here, as you just wrote the post status email kind of mentioned this as well.
Sure.
So we can talk about it.
I mean, anyone that's run a blog or really dealt with it with comments in general in WordPress, to the degree, like in the past, that could just be you set up a new client site and you're annoyed because you have to go turn off comments on pages and delete the ones on the sample page and, you know, do these little workarounds and you have to set up moderation and all these things, and it's pretty aggravating. And that's because comments haven't gotten all that much of attention in the past several years. And what kind of spawned this for me, one, I deal with comments on post status, and I think it was last year now, I gave recommendations for improving WordPress comments. And since then, I've been pretty happy because a number of those have been changed to make things easier, like turning comments off on pages by default. The computer code. I had a client.
Is that still shown or is that not?
No, it's gone too. So
oh, wow.
That was my props for 4. Whatever, just
oh, nice.
4.2. The code that's like, you can use this type of HTML in your comment. Like, that's like a different era type of thing.
Yeah,
you shouldn't expect anyone to use HTML in a comment. So a couple of those things have gotten fixed, for lack of a better word, in WordPress. And there's still a long way to go. Jeff Chandler from WP Tavern's been on a roll about this because he recently made it so that every comment that gets made has to be moderated. So he's now seeing the pain of moderation in WordPress comments.
Right. I guess the format hasn't really changed, I would say, in commenting online in, you know, how long, 20 years or something. So I'm not sure how much I'm expecting WordPress to really do much here or not. Like, I kind of get it if you've got a load of comments to moderate, maybe, you know, not having to click and then wait and click and wait or something is a bit better there. But I'm not sure how much room there is for innovation, given how little comments on, you know, generally speaking, on the internet seem pretty stagnant.
Yeah, I mean, there's three aspects of this. One is you've got the administration of comments, which I think WordPress can make adjustments to. That's where we really have a lot of leeway.
Sure.
Another one is the innovation that has come in the last 20 years, the frame time of... is that the time frame that you've given it?
That's the arbitrarily the one I gave.
That's a long time for a lack of innovation. Where the innovation has been, though, is third-party commenting systems like Disqus, Livefyre, Facebook. Mm-hmm. To a smaller degree, things like Jetpack or Postmatic, where it enables email responses or, you know, email notifications of new comments, things like that. Upvoting of comments like that. There's some social elements and some ease of getting updates about comments that have come in.
Yeah, I think those systems, I think, are very they're valid products in themselves, but I don't really see them being much better. Like, I don't really prefer Disqus to default WordPress comments. It's not doing much for me. I'm somebody that kind of reads comments. I'd never really comment myself, and I almost wish that I didn't read comments. But it's kind of I don't know, somehow draws me in when I'm at the bottom of a page and I see something somebody's saying. I'm not really sure. I don't know. We can kind of take this in several directions. Like, one
is, do you think comments are worth investing in?
Yeah. So that's kind of the bigger question for me, is like, commenting on the internet, I think everybody knows, is, you know, 90% garbage. So I either a way for readers to give feedback and interact with each other needs to be done in a bit of a fundamentally different way, where you don't get hateful opinions and people usually rising to the top and annoying everybody else. I think that's kind of one kind of game theory problem of generally somebody that wants to disrupt can do quite easily.
So the one of the downsides of a comment is its degree of permanence for bad comments. But right. Also, that's one of the unfortunate things. If you do get great feedback and say you get it from a tweet or a Facebook message or something because the comment wasn't the easiest way to offer feedback, then you have a lack of permanence.
Right, yeah. Like, it definitely... Sometimes if I write something and people are talking about it on Twitter, then I'm like, well, I kind of want all this to be in the same place so other people can see it as well. So I see that. I just don't, I think people don't, most people don't like to write comments.
So it sounds like there is at least an agreement, though. We do seem to have some level of agreement that it would be nice if there were a place for good comments to be showcased.
Yeah, but then again, I don't really like the... Like, I understand why Jeff Chandler's kind of gone for the, okay, well, we're now going to moderate everything because we're getting stick for just allowing anybody to comment anything they want. And it's kind of, you know, not acceptable always.
It can create a damaging community.
Right, right, exactly. So maybe it is a problem that you just have to face when you're got when you're trying to get engagement from people. I kind of prefer it when I read something on a site and there's no comments, in terms of like, this is something that I've written for people to read and consume and they can go discuss it with themselves if they want. But this isn't a place where I say something and then ask for people to say things about it. Like I generally don't know why, but I kind of not so big on that approach. Like, I read Hacker News, where commenting is a really big thing there, but you go read, you know, somebody links to something that maybe has comments on it. Maybe it's just a scientific paper. Maybe it's something else. And people can come back to Hacker News and talk about it there if they want to. I prefer that approach. I think that allows people to, you know, they're already in their own community on Hacker News or Reddit or whatever it is. You know, Reddit probably not the best example for this conversation.
Do you think toggling comments can serve that same purpose?
I think that can definitely help, yeah. I think that would be... Like, I hate it when I'm on YouTube and I watch a video and, like, the comment is right there and it's just, you know, I don't know. Most people know how poor most YouTube comments are.
Sure.
It just really kind of lowers the tone for me when I watch kind of, like, some nice TED video or something like that, and then somebody's just, like, spammed ASCII art over the whole comments page and, like, people are trolling each other everywhere. Like, it's not... Maybe this isn't a problem with comments, but people, but I don't know.
No, I mean, well, but if you have a consistent thing going on, then it's worth looking into. And I think you make a good point, because one of the things I think that WordPress could make easier, there's plugins that allow you to do this, but things like featuring particularly good comments, if you do want to highlight something.
Yeah, so Ars Technica does that. And every now and then, they do have kind of a good somewhat controversial story, where usually you'll either agree with the writer or not, but not in a, you know, ad hominem attack kind of way, just in a, yeah, but I see what you're saying. But then they're usually the ones also promoting the comments that are, you know, more likely than not just kind of agreeing with their own slant on that. So sometimes mm-hmm. I kind of find myself just reading those and thinking like, oh, well, you're just kind of like trying to, it kind of seems like now you're trying to say, look, everyone now agrees with me what I've written here because I've promoted those comments to the top. So I don't think the people writing the article is infallible either. So
I have an example. I mean, personally, I would want to highlight a comment as much as possible. If, say, let's say I write a blog post about Matt Mullenweg, and then Matt comments on the post, and it's buried 80 comments down in my post, but it's relevant because it changes my post to a degree. Like, I can update the post, and I probably would.
Right.
But also, it'd be nice to kind of pull his comment to the top and be like, here's, like, a response. And the concept of that response is something that I think Medium's done a pretty interesting job of doing, where it actually shows blog post response as comments of a sort, and it gives it more of a priority. Like, this is an important piece of text that I'm about to write because it's like a blog post, not like a comment, but it does show up on the canonical post.
Right. I kind of get that. If you had written a post and there's 80 comments and Matt Mullenweg is one of those, I think I would probably just prefer that to be in place line 78 where he decided to write it. Like I don't know. It's maybe you obviously have the option to promote whatever you want and all of that. I just kind of feel like it's more true to form if the comments were just shown as they were made rather than you deciding I want to pull this one to the top. But I don't know if there's anything there or not, really. I don't have, generally, you probably tell I don't have great experience or thoughts about comments.
Yeah. Well, and that's common to the way different sites have different types of communities and people have different expectations for what they want to be able to see.
Right.
Site owners have different desires for how they want to create those communities.
And I think, like, I'm somebody that kind of has the frustration but not the energy to find the answers. And I definitely don't think I'm alone there. And I think there are so many more people that, you know, for all the other reasons of having negative experience around commenting and, all kinds of discrimination that happens within that. And there's that whole side of that I am obviously, like, generally speaking, not subject to, but I understand that people must hate commenting a heck of a lot more than me for all those reasons. So I don't know. I technically, you know, we can talk about WordPress and how it can help you managing comments and maybe cool features we can make to do that. I've probably sidetracked this whole conversation with me just now.
I joked not too long ago about let's just replace comments with emoji reactions like Slack has.
I would much prefer that.
But that aside, which I think might end up being a plugin, some people were talking about making it. That aside, one of the things I proposed in a recent note where I talked about comments was, people are, Scott Taylor, the release lead, is treating comments as kind of a pet project for him for 4.4. Rachel Baker is very talented. She's the component manager for comments in WordPress. And I'm just saying, what if we just threw caution to the wind and mapped out a world where comment management's perfect and we see how close we can get to perfect comment management and moderation and the ability to create better communities without busting back compat completely? Mm. What role do you think WordPress could have in that world?
Oh, I think it could do a huge amount there. It would have to go, like, when you're talking about managing an online community, then that's more than like clicking an approve button or something. I think you would definitely need to go a lot deeper in terms of, you know, solving the kind of accountability problem and things like that for commenting and, you know, the user's reputation, upvoting. Like, you've got a lot of tools at your disposal that maybe you can use to make that better. The current stuff that WordPress does, which, you know, there's plugins for anti-spam, which are generally pretty good, I think, at this point. Then you've got moderation, which, you know, I gather could be a fair bit better. I think the volume thing as well, like, we have a couple of sites where they've got, you know, 2 million plus comments, and it's definitely not, you know, that fun to be paging through lists kind of, you know, one page at a time like you do, or searching isn't very fast and things like that. So there's a lot there that could be incrementally proved. It's not something I'm hugely passionate about, so I'm not really sure how deep you could go on it.
I think performance is actually a really good point. That's one area where WordPress isn't doing so hot. And,
yeah,
you know, you're adding potentially hundreds of requests to the page. If you have a lot of comments, because you got all those gravatars, you've got all those different things that are dynamic about the comment author.
Right. I mean, that's another problem. If an article has 500 comments, how is that useful to a reader in most cases? Like, presumably no one is reading 500 comments. So, like, yes, you can page them, so now you have the latest 20 comments, or you show them in the other order. But I guess the pulling out specific comments helps with that, but I just don't really know. How do 500 people have a conversation on one page? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I do think that there's a certain type of person that probably does read everything. Maybe if you're the subject of a post, or if you're just really embedded into a particular blog's community. But a lot of people have removed comments for that very reason, because they were just dumpster fires.
Yeah, I feel like there was a kind of push probably earlier this year for a lot of people just to...
I know to Recode and The Verge and...
Right.
And,
but I don't know if that was throw up our arms, we can't moderate this in a way that is acceptable to everybody, so let's just do away with it. Or if that was a genuinely, like, we think that having feedback on our stuff is not a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know. But I do think there's a sweet spot where comments can be really useful. I think for blogs the size of PostStatus or WP Tavern or, you know, other people's niche blogs where, you know, a post blowing up means you get like 100 comments, but your average post gets a handful of comments that are corrections or they're just generally some additional feedback, and it's a relatively professional community where comments can be really great. The other place where comments can really stink is if it's just nothing ever there. It makes the blog look a little empty. Like,
yeah,
you have a small company with comments open and there's never comments.
Right. I think I went to the PostStatus post for our last podcast and scrolled down to the bottom, just, I don't know, got to the end of the page. I was like, oh, there's a comment form here. Oh, but there's no comments. And there is a slight connection you make there of like, well, no one has decided to comment. That's a shame. So if you listen to this, go right now. Don't go write a comment. But I definitely get that, you know, an empty comment list is worse than no comment list. So, you know.
Yes.
I think if I were going to start a blog now, then, not because I don't think I'd get any comments, I don't think I would have comments on it. I think there are now enough avenues on the internet for people to express their opinions that it doesn't need to be attached directly to the content below all the time. I don't know. Maybe I'm going back on what I said earlier. I just personally, I wouldn't turn them on. I think maybe I'm just a narcissist that wants to say things and not listen to anybody else. I don't know.
I certainly don't think they're for everybody. I'd be happy
to get the comments on Twitter and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. I just don't know that I want the problem of them being fixed on that page, you know?
Yeah, I certainly think it depends on the site. But I do think, I'll throw a number at it, maybe 10 or 15% of WordPress sites are appropriate venues for comments. Maybe less than that, but...
Yeah, I would probably say, I bet it is less than that. Like, well, there are a lot of people, I guess, that are just doing their own blogs, but I think even a lot of people just blogging don't really need comments or probably don't get comments. Like, if you were to, let's say you looked at the long tail of blogs on WordPress.com, like, I'm sure...
Oh, jeez. Long... They don't have posts either.
Okay, so tell them what's the deal of posts. Long tail of posts. It's a valid question of the, like, WordPress is meant to be like the 80-20, right? But
you know what would be interesting is what if the whole paradigm for comments changed to be called feedback instead?
Well, I was thinking what if WordPress decides to move comments to a feature plugin? Maybe that would be a... I'm going to be really annoying Scott Taylor and Rachel now because they're the ones that are leading the charge. I'm recommending they remove the feature entirely.
But feedback could be at the bottom of the post. It says leave a comment or leave a private comment, like an email, basically.
Right.
Or it could be tweet at this author or Facebook this author or something like that.
That could work.
And it's directly a response, and maybe WordPress even has a way to log that response if the site owner chooses to log those.
Put them in a table and maybe you can approve and disapprove them and share them on your site.
Yeah, it's called feedback, though. It's not comments. Clearly, it's not comments.
I think the headline would be catchy, WordPress removes comments.
Introduces feedback. Works a lot like comments. Would we change the table name, or would we just keep it with WP Comments?
No, you'd have to keep it.
Yeah. But I'm glad to see a little bit of activity on this, and I think it can be improved for the sites that do use it. But
I'm sure people that do care about commenting, I'm sure they'll feel well served by this.
I do think that one comment feature could be making it easier to just nuke them from a website. Like, not get rid of existing comments necessarily, but like the ability to just tell this website no.
Like, hold on.
No. Yeah.
Say no to what? What is the question?
No to comments.
As in, like, can't you just turn comments off on your blog globally currently?
Yeah, but it's a little bit annoying sometimes. Like, you might decide it after a year, and then
you can't just stop new comments coming in. Is that what you're saying?
You can stop new comments, but it might be hard to say, like, let's get rid of everything, or
right, okay,
change status on old comments, and there's all sorts of struggles from a workflow perspective, I guess.
Right, fair enough. Yeah.
But I guess our advice would be consider your comment policies and your general take on comments earlier than later, because changing it down the road can be a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, if you know, I'd probably be slightly terrified if I was responsible for running some kind of online community, because these are difficult questions, I think, and difficult to draw the line.
I do tend to be a ignore it type of person. Like, I let my comment sections go, and I moderate bad ones out, but I don't necessarily respond to every comment or anything like that, unless there's just a particular question.
Have you had anything in the way of, hateful might be a bit of a strong word, but...
If I do, I get rid of them.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And my general policy is an author has to have one approved comment on the site before I approve something.
Okay.
But, like, if you've commented on my site before and then you go back and comment again, then it automatically whitelists it unless you hit some type of other filter, sure. Like you put 10 links in there or something.
Yeah.
All right, we beat comments to death, I think.
Perhaps.
So let's go on to another non-contentious subject.
Yeah, PHP versions. No, we kind of... So for everybody listening, it started out from the PHP version discussion, but I think maybe we'll push it slightly in the direction of PHP 7, HHVM, the future, rather than, squabbles about deprecating...
The past.
Yeah, versions of the PHP. But
so what
having said that, I do think that we should touch on it. If only I kind of wanted to perhaps try and explain why WordPress does support the versions of PHP it does, just for anybody that doesn't know. And anybody that maybe wants a little bit of a retort when they're talking to somebody from the Drupal community as to why WordPress supports.
Well, actually, double backup.
Sure, I'm maybe moving ahead.
Current version of PHP, next version of PHP, and minimum version of PHP for WordPress. What are those?
I'm not sure on the minor and patch versions, but it's basically 5.2 is supported all the way up to PHP 7 alpha, I guess it's in? Release candidate?
Yep, 5.2.4 is the minimum for WordPress. The minimum recommended is 5.6 now, which just changed from 5.4. And then the current is 5.6, right? What's the current version
yes,
of PHP?
Yeah, it's 5.6, but current version, like, 5.5 is not end of life, I think. It depends what, like, distribution of Linux you're on, whether you're going to get what version in your main line and things like that. So it kind of depends, but yeah, if you're on, you should really be on 5.6, you know.
The first version of 5.6 was released in... August. The most recent release of 5.6 was in August.
Okay, yeah. Like, a bunch of production stuff that we're running is 5.5.9, because that's the LTS for Ubuntu 14.04. So a lot of people are on that version still.
Yeah. The first version of 5.6, which is the latest major version, was released August 2014. So right. about a year now.
Yep.
PHP 5.6 has been out, and they're skipping to PHP 7, which is coming out in November.
Yeah, though I would say it's going to be a while before people on really most WordPress setups are actually going to be able to run that, because any PHP modules will need to be
support it.
Yeah, support PHP 7, and it's got quite a drastically changed module API. So things like the memcached module, for example, currently has like a beta version out for PHP 7, but there's a bunch of other things. I don't know the status of things like image magic module, which is something that WordPress typically is using quite a lot. That kind of thing that people, it's not kind of like as soon as 7.0 is released stable, you're going to be out of grade. It's probably not going to be quite that quick.
Right. And end-of-lifing PHP means, say, 5.6, 5.5, 5.4, 5.3, they stop releasing point releases and maintaining security.
Yeah, so it's worth saying that PHP 5.5, 4 and 5.3, I think, are end-of-life. Obviously, 5.2 is as well. So WordPress will still... takes the position of supporting those longer than the PHP team does, which I think they must have slightly different priorities based off of that.
Users.
Right, exactly.
But basically the contention is in that, not that WordPress doesn't support modern PHP, because WordPress is going to fully support PHP 7 the day it comes out. The contention is in not even the recommended version of PHP, because WordPress recommends version 5.6, which is the current major stable version. So the contention is that WordPress will work on and supports and doesn't force people to upgrade minor or older versions of PHP that PHP itself has end of life and therefore doesn't keep up to date. WordPress still supports, keeps up to date, and furthermore, slightly, doesn't use newer features of PHP in new development.
Right. So
beyond that.
Yeah, there's a couple of... I'd say there's a few reasons why people don't like WordPress supporting old versions. And the one that maybe has a little bit of merit is by supporting an insecure version of PHP, which the PHP team have said they're not going to release updates for, is... There is maybe a little bit of a user conflict there in terms of not taking such a hard line on the version of PHP and allowing people to run insecure software. It kind of depends where you think the responsibility lies for something like that. Is it up to the project, say, we know more than the users and you really can't use that version on PHP because it's insecure? Which I think maybe there's a little bit of merit there. I'm not totally sure. Some distributions will backport fixes, security fixes to PHP, though I think in practice not actually many do end up getting backported to old versions of PHP. The other one is like I want to be able to use modern development practices with WordPress and modern PHP features. That one I'm really not really sold on so much. Being able to use, I don't know, PHP namespaces or something, or how WordPress could be much faster if it used all of these modern PHP features, usually isn't true. And I think that is a little bit of the kind of just, we want to use the greatest thing kind of mentality.
You mentioned namespaces. That's one feature that I hear all the time for, like, why can't we use namespaces? Like, that's a big feature gain that we would get. What are some other things in the last several PHP versions that are like on that level?
The biggest one for me is PHP closures. That has always been a huge one for me. But I mean, it depends what people mean when they say, when can we use namespaces? I mean,
in core.
Right. Is anybody...
Because you can do it in plugins.
But is any of the core team asking for that? I don't really think so.
I think I've heard from lead developers basically no. Like,
right.
It's not a huge deal. Like, yeah, sure, we could restructure things and we could namespace everything, but we don't really have to.
Right, and I think maybe what it is when developers working with WordPress, they wish WordPress was written in a way that did use namespaces.
And is that for discoverability purposes?
I think that is probably more for... just prejudice on like this code doesn't look good because it's not using these features.
They want to look at code that looks like their current
right
sexy code.
Exactly. Like, for example, when I do development, then I use PHP namespaces, I use all the order loading stuff. I use closures everywhere. Like, I do all of this. Like, you can release a plugin and say we only support 5.4 plus. There's plenty of plugins on the repo that do that. I think that it's perfectly acceptable to do that. So I just don't really feel as super strongly. And I usually find, you know, I definitely had a lot of conversations with people that this really does upset them, that WordPress is still supporting, you know, this or written in this way.
And WordPress's reasoning is, and I want to move on to PHP 7's features in a second, but WordPress's reasoning is basically, if we are the bully and we're the ones that do this, then we're going to force websites to break or other tools on people's hosting accounts to break. And we don't want to be that person. We want to support the users, let it work on what they need to work, and then go at it from a different direction, meaning work with hosts to get host updates.
Right.
Hosts to update the boxes.
Yeah, so you're not really breaking anything for anyone. You're really leaving them behind. You know, WordPress 4.4 is released and requires PHP 7. It won't happen, but let's just presume it did. You're not going to force push fatal error code to everybody. You're just not going to. No one else is going to have an upgrade path that isn't on that version of PHP.
Mm.
So it's not. And you know, the if you look at the stats, then you need to obviously look at the stats of what version of PHP the latest version of WordPress running on, rather than WordPress across the board, because there's obviously a huge amount of just sites out there that have never been updated, and they're on PHP, you know, 5.2, but they're not going to probably be updated anyway, so that doesn't really matter to them whether you bump your PHP minimum version anyway, because they're not upgrading their sites. So this is really for people that are following the upgrade path, but are on 5.2. And yeah, you're right in that WordPress is their primary focus is those people, and they don't want to leave them behind. I wouldn't say it's that they don't want to break stuff, but they want them to keep getting the security patches and the, you know, new features and all of that kind of stuff. And frankly, in terms of like WordPress development, the PHP language is not really holding WordPress back. I wouldn't say that should be a huge priority. And probably shouldn't get quite as much attention as it does. There may be a point where WordPress is so well developed that the thing holding it back is some language features that it needs, but it definitely isn't that now.
Hmm. And to give people a little bit of information on what you were just talking about with regards to versions, roughly 75% of WordPress versions are running 4.0 or newer. 52% or so are running the latest two versions, 4.2, 4.3, which is actually quite good.
Mm-hmm.
PHP versions, about a little over 50% are running 5.4 or 5.5. Oh, I'm sorry. More like 65% of people are running 5.4 through 5.6. 5.6 only has 4.3% adoption.
Wow.
10.8 on 5.5. 41.4 on 5.4. And what really pisses off PHP people is 31.1 are on 5.3, and 12.4% of installs are on 5.2.
Yeah.
So that's what annoys people, is that part. But those are probably also the people that are running less than WordPress 4.0.
Right, yeah, there's a correlation there probably between the lower versions of PHP and the lower versions of WordPress, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, this is and going to be, and it's kind of like trying to solve the backwards compatibility problem by just deciding to break backwards compatibility once. Like that, all that does is buy you a certain amount of time. Like, it's an ongoing problem that there are new versions of PHP coming out. On a, you know, I guess we don't really know because PHP 7 has taken quite a while, but this is always going to be a problem. It's more about the philosophy that you choose rather than specifically when are we going to drop PHP 5.2, because as soon as that happens, we're going to be talking about when do you drop PHP 5.3. So unless people aren't like broadly on the same page around how are we actually treating this problem as a whole, who are the people that we're thinking about primarily, developers or users, then I feel like you're going to be kind of swimming upstream forever if you disagree with it right now.
And actually, every single time I've seen someone get mad about 5.2, they immediately talk about 5.3 along with it.
So right, okay. Fair enough. Whatever.
And then really they're like, and there's no difference between 5.4 and 5.6, so you might as well do 5.6. So it's
right,
like
but
go from 5.2 to 5.6.
Right, but I mean, it's not going to be long. Like PHP 7 is going to be such a leap ahead in terms of, you know, features and performance. Like the stuff around type hitting that you get with PHP 7 is really going to change a lot of code that's written for PHP 7, like pretty dramatically.
So let's skip straight to that. Talk to me about PHP 7.
Okay. So there's... I'm wondering what to I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of what PHP 7 has, but one of the pretty big things that it allows is a lot more type level stuff. So you can now do type hitting on scalar values, which means you can declare what type a parameter has to be that is passed to a function, if it is a string, an integer, a float, or you used to be able to do this for arrays and object types, but now you can do it with scalar values, so it's a lot more going to be a lot more commonplace, I think. But as well as that, you can also hint now the return type of your function. And the basic idea is, well, depends what mode you're using, but let's presume that you're using the strict mode. Then anything that doesn't comply to any of these, you know, your function says it returns this, but it did return this, then you just kind of get fatal error, or in some places, compile error, I think.
And that's a big security win too, right? Because...
It's a more defensive way of writing code, where you can get a lot less edge cases. Like historically, PHP has had this idea that
you got a string that was zero.
Right. So there's maybe, you know, I'd say it's more a way to eradicate bugs, but you know, bugs lead to security issues, so it definitely helps there too. Now I don't really expect WordPress core to adopt any of this stuff, even if it could in a long time. It kind of is a
But we can talk about it in the sense of people developing websites.
Right. If you like to develop code more rigidly, maybe you come from a more static language or something, then I think you're going to appreciate a lot of the features in PHP 7 around this stuff. So you can, you know, take PHP type conversions and comparisons with double equals, where, you know, string zero is double equal to false. And, you know, if that's the kind of thing that really annoys you and you think is totally the most stupid thing ever, then, you know, you're going to appreciate writing code in, you know, these ways more, I think. If, on the other hand, I don't know if there's a correlation here with how experienced you are or not, but typically when you're starting out, you want a language to be quite forgiving, and it doesn't matter if you get, you know, the types wrong on two variables, it still allows you to compare them and do what you'd expect and things like that. So I think that I'll probably be... I can kind of see myself using a lot of these features just because I like to be a bit more strict with my code now. But I'm not quite sure what it's going to do to the ecosystem in terms of, like, what are most of the code examples doing now? Like, when people post code on Stack Overflow and, you know, just to do something simple, are people now writing PHP as if it was a statically typed language, or is it going to carry on being the much more loosely written kind of language that it, you know, is definitely moving away from, but definitely was a lot more in the past?
And for people that aren't even developers at all, a benefit is speed. I'm looking at a resource right now that says most real-world applications are gaining 25% to 70% performance gains, or getting 25% to 70% performance gains on apps.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely, you know, real-world. Contrived, then you can get a heck of a lot faster than that. I think maybe... You know, on your, let's say you're writing, I don't know, image processing algorithm or something like that, then I think you're looking at much bigger performance gains, maybe, you know, 200 to 300% there. But the problem is, when you do real world example, there's often a lot of other things slowing it down. So if you take benchmarking WordPress, even if your PHP interpreter ran, well, I guess it kind of does run at the speed of light, but if it was instant, then you would still have a bunch of other time that was spent doing other things like talking to your Memcache server and going to your database server and whatever else. Then there's only a certain amount that the interpreter can do in those situations anyway, which is why I think you don't sometimes see such as huge gains as you can in a contrived example.
I'm looking at a DigitalOcean blog post that shows, I'll use a couple versions. PHP 5.3 could handle 205 requests a second. 5.6, 262. PHP 7, 545. And that's on WordPress.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a minute to vent about these benchmarks. So the PHP one is saying, so 5.4 was what, 200 requests a second? Is that right?
Yeah, 5.3.
So I don't understand. If that is on one server, then that means your response time per load is got to be in the few milliseconds. And I've had this gripe with a lot of these benchmarks in that either they're running their benchmarks against like PHP serving, with Supercache or something like that. It doesn't seem to add up that these numbers make sense for doing a whole generate page of WordPress. Like, you can't really generate a WordPress page in less than, like, I don't know, this is going to get incredibly, but let's say you've got a couple of WordPress menus on there, five posts.
Half a second.
Yeah, like a couple hundred milliseconds is like pretty good. You get down to 100 milliseconds, like you're doing well, and you've probably got some fragment caching on there at this point. So when you're doing 500 requests a second and you can only, sure you can do requests in parallel, but that doesn't allow you to actually do all of those in parallel quite as quick, because the CPU can still only perform one thing at once, unless you're doing multi-core stuff or whatever. But I guess I never see the benchmarks go into enough detail for me to really understand how they've managed to get that amount of requests. It was the same on a lot of the HHVM stuff when they did some performance testing and were showing 2 to 3 millisecond response times for WordPress, and it didn't make sense, because you can't even talk to your WordPress and Memcache pretty much in that amount of time. So I'm not sure what I'm missing on some of these, but I don't know. I think that it's like maximum cached up to the hilt, and in which case I don't really see what the point of the benchmark is, because you're not really testing any for WordPress.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen a good resource on this, but I don't have it at top
Maybe
of mind
we can
right
put
now.
It in the show notes.
Yeah, I'll try to find one. But when people are doing benchmarks of PHP 7 versus HHVM, which was something that came out and people got really excited about, PHP 7, once the alpha came out, people were really excited about that too, because it was just as fast as HHVM for all practical purposes.
Yeah, so when HHVM, well, when hip hop. I think that's just what they called it, actually. So when that came out, I was totally like, I was super interested in it, and I followed it pretty closely. And when HHVM came out, again, it was a lot easier to get up and running. You could run it in fast CGI, so you could put it behind Nginx, and you could, host it how you would a lot of other stuff. I was super interested in it and ran a lot of stuff in it. But I think maybe there's still that slight amount of, worry about, like, I'm not running PHP anymore, I'm now running HHVM, and some things might not act the same, and it's not quite as proven out in terms of, a huge amount of variety of sites just running HHVM and it being stable and you're not having to restart it every day because it just randomly crashes and stuff. So I think when PHP 7 came out and it shows it's, like, as fast as HHVM, faster in some cases, slower in others, like, that's more exciting because people know that they can just upgrade to 7, providing the module support is there, rather than HHVM was more like, well, I could shift everything to HHVM and retest everything, but it's much more of a bigger leap. And I think that the amount of people moving to HHVM is really going to reduce unless it's people that are wanting to use Hackling, which maybe we can go into. Once PHP 7 is out, then really for me, as somebody that is just kind of wanting to write PHP and wanting to run it in the fastest possible way, like, I've decided just to wait for PHP 7 to do that. And I think a lot of other people will be doing the same there.
Yeah. I was talking to Joshua Strebel, the founder of Pagely, and he said that PHP 7 is just so much easier, and they're not even going to screw with HHVM much anymore because of the same reason.
Right. When I was at, trying to remember what the event was called exactly. It was like the Pantheon Agency Summit or something in San Francisco this summer. And there was a great talk there by two of the people from the HHVM team. It was Sarah Goldman. I can't remember the other guy's name who was involved with the design of Hacklang. But anyway, I asked the question, like, look, I was following HHVM and I was super excited about it, but then PHP 7 comes along and looks like that's going to be kind of offering the same performance benefits. Like, even though you're biased, like, what do you recommend that I do? And her answer was, you know, umming and ahhing for about a minute and then saying, well, you should probably just wait because, you know, the ecosystem is there and that. So I would say that and unless you want other benefits of HHVM, which is, seems to be mostly around Hacklang at this point, then you might as well just wait for PHP 7.
It'll be faster. That's what I care about.
That's pretty much all I care about as well, is it'll make things quicker, and it reduces server hardware requirements as well, which is always a welcome thing.
Yeah, I think from a raw PHP standpoint and using new features, like, I stay within the type of development that is mostly using WordPress as a framework on top of PHP.
You're still writing PHP 4.
Well, not even that, but it's, well, basically, but I'm getting deep enough into plugin development to where I'm taking a lot of advantage of newer PHP features.
No, and I would say neither am I at all. You know, if you look at, I don't know, generators and stuff like that, like, I just don't have the I guess I'm not programming the type of things, or I'm just too much of a naive developer to really understand where I would use these things. But for the most part, I think that, you know, since PHP 5.3 and I could write closures, I've just been happy with everything else. So I don't really feel like I'm waiting for the next thing. I feel like if I want a big change in how I program, usually what I do is go and program in a different language. Whereas I'm pretty happy with the kind of feature set that WordPress core is typically using, like the REST API. We've totally developed using that, and I don't feel like I've really been held back by any of that in any way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just use WordPress APIs for most of what I want, so I mean, it's not really a big deal other than that initial structure,
right?
And for that, I just don't care. Yeah. But you know, people are opinionated.
It's a lot of. Especially developers.
So a lot of people are going to be excited about PHP 7 coming out in November, and it's nice. I mean, my favorite part of this, and we didn't spend enough time on it, is just that, and I'm shout out to Aaron Jordan for kind of taking the lead on
definitely.
But PHP 7 is going to work with WordPress out of the box the day it's released. It's already working with WordPress. It's just not official because it's not an actual release yet. And so when people want to support PHP 7 on November 12th, they can.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I think that it's great that Aaron is doing that work to see exactly, you know, there are some funny things that are now removed from PHP that WordPress was doing. I definitely never, it never crossed my mind that WordPress wouldn't support PHP 7, I guess, out you know, on release. But maybe that is.
But to be able to fully pass unit tests against it.
I guess so. I see that probably as PHP's job more than WordPress.
PHP 4 style thing?
So they removed PHP 4 style constructors, which was
Those constructors. That was the biggest thing. But there were a couple other minor issues.
Yeah. There were. I don't think there has been a huge amount of work necessary, which I think is a good thing. You know, in terms of. WordPress always isn't doing crazy old stuff, you know, to much degree. And PHP 7 is also keeping very good backwards compatibility. It's not kind of, you know, Drupal 8 is out, so now Drupal 7 stuff is obsolete. Like, it doesn't quite work that way, I guess, with PHP and WordPress.
Cool. Got anything else, or did we just knock this one down?
I mean, that's everything scattered that I have to say on it right now.
We never have to talk about PHP versions again, is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, until PHP 7.1 or 8. I don't know what comes next.
They'll probably just skip to 10.
For anybody that doesn't know, the reason that PHP 6 doesn't exist is 5.4 was going to be called PHP 6, so there had already been...
What happened there? Did it just, like, crap all over itself?
I think they were planning to do a lot more, but then when they scaled it back, they realized it probably shouldn't be called PHP 6. But the problem is people had already written books on, like, how to program with PHP 6. So I think...
So now there will never be a PHP 6. It's like the 13th floor.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of want a PHP 6 book on my desk, maybe just...
Awesome.
Yeah.
So that's why it's going to be PHP 7.
Yep.
Oh, good. Okay. Last time we did this, we didn't say where to reach people. So obviously go to poststatus.com for stuff. Join the club, poststatus.com/club, $99. Best $99 you ever spent in my personal, humble, biased opinion.
Is it $99 a year or what is that? $99
a year.
Okay, cool.
You get Slack, you get the newsletter, you get all sorts of stuff like that. Now, if you do what you guys at HumanMade did, it's only $69, but you got to buy 10 or more. HumanMade bought everyone at their company one. Oh, so wow. you can do bulk, but you got to get serious with me.
Yeah, no, I'll do some pimping for it, cuz I definitely enjoy the email. It's where I catch up with all my WordPress news, and I am sitting in the Slack too, though I do have most of the channels muted just because I have about 7 Slack teams in total, and I'm noticing more that I'm totally getting Slack fatigue when, you know, I kind of have to do this ritual every half hour of clicking through and reading things. Like, I don't really know the best way. Maybe when I'm working, I should turn all notifications off for ones apart from the human-made Slack. I don't really know how to handle it. It's just right now, yeah. I've got this perpetual Slack icon with a little red circle on it for some amount of notifications.
Yeah, I have the same issue. You can set those per channel and group and per channel within a group. So some people, like, we have an e-commerce channel, for instance, so some people that are really e-commerce focused might keep notifications for that one or whatever. But we do have a off topic where I try to direct, like, the chitter chatter, but, you know, it's an active group. There's hundreds of people in there, and a lot of those people are active every day, so it's really nice for your distractions, and then you might mute it for the rest of the day.
Right, that's what I should do.
But anyway, the Slack is a lot of fun. Definitely a good distraction reason to join. I didn't mean for this to be an ad for
PostStatus. No, I'm Joe_Hoyle on Twitter, and that's all the self-promotion I need.
And I'm at Krogsgard, where I tweet too much, so... We will see everybody next week.
Great. Thank you very much.